On this week's 51%, we meet a woman who teaches empathy.
So empathy is the mutual respect, and assertiveness is mutual respect and self-respect at the same time.
And she talks about the difference between boys and girls when it comes to empathy. I'm Allison Dunn, and this is 51%.
It's all right to cry. It might make you feel better. Raindrops from your eyes, washing all the mad out of you. Raindrops from your eyes might make you feel better.
Emily Abad is someone who was raised to put others' needs ahead of her own and not speak up for herself, and so she struggled to find a balance between empathy and assertiveness. When her religious father refused to accept her after she came out as gay, she was at a loss as to what to do. Then she began working with kids at the Mosaic Project, an experiential education program addressing issues of diversity, empathy, and conflict resolution. Teaching kids the power of speaking their truth from a place of love helped Abad to find her own voice. Inflection Point host Lauren Schiller spoke with Abad, director of programs for the California-based Mosaic Project, whose mission is to work toward a peaceful future by uniting children of diverse backgrounds, providing them with essential community-building skills, and empowering them to become peacemakers.
For me, as a kid, I did not learn what it meant to be assertive. I did not learn how to stand up for myself in a way that was respectful of others, because I think a lot of young girls, we are often taught to sort of stay quiet or to put other people's needs before ourselves. We're the caretakers, right? And if we are to speak up or to stand up for ourselves, it could be taken as being bossy or the other B word. So I definitely didn't learn those skills as a kid. I was very quiet growing up. I know not every girl grows up being quiet. I happened to be a very quiet and very shy child. As I grew older, I started to just like come into my personality a little bit more, although I still consider myself to be a shy person and introverted, masquerading as an extrovert. But I didn't learn how to stand up for myself. I didn't know what that meant. And so there was a lot of situations in my life where I did not stand up for myself, and times that I wish I had those assertiveness skills, but I just didn't know. I didn't have the tools, and I didn't know that there were other tools I could use. Coming to Mosaic, when I first came as a volunteer, as a cabin leader, I was working with the kids, and I saw the other instructors teaching the students these skills. And as the students were learning, I was also learning. And it was a process. Even in assertiveness skills, the first thing that we teach the students is just how to say the word no. It's a really hard word for a lot of people to say, and it has so much power. And there was one exercise that we were doing where we had to say no in a strong voice, but without being mean. And as the instructors were going around to each student and as they were practicing it themselves, they were all saying it very strong, like, no, no, right? And then it got to me, and my strong voice at that time, I don't even know if you can hear this on the microphone, my strong voice at the time was, no. As quiet as could be.
Yeah. Like, and you're working with fourth and fifth grade kids who are belting it out.
Yes. And some of them were a little more aggressive.
But they really enjoyed that.
Yeah, it was fun, you know. We were having fun. And so, yeah, but that was my strong voice at that time. And I didn't know I could even be stronger than that. Looking back on it now, I almost want to cry just like looking at the transformation that I had made from that time to now. Because there are just so many times in my life where I wish I could have said no in a strong voice, in a voice that meant something to me. Because I think there's plenty of times when I said no, but I was, you know, sort of like, no, or, you know, like laughing as I say it because I felt uncomfortable. And sometimes we laugh when we're uncomfortable, which can come across as being passive, right? So as I continued to watch the kids learn, I continued to learn. And then when I became an instructor myself, I still was learning from them. I continually was so inspired by the young ones and how quickly they could pick it up. And it was helping me realize how ingrained it was in my mind to be quiet and to be passive and to not speak up for myself. And I've had many, many years of my mind being trained to do that. And so there's a lot of unlearning I had to do. And it was in that situation with my dad where I really felt it come out for the first time, where I felt my voice get strong in a way that meant something to me and to him. It was the first time where I used my voice where he actually knew that I was being serious, and he knew that this was important to me. We tell the students that assertiveness is being strong without being mean. And it's not just about being strong without being mean, it's feeling strong without being mean. And in that time, I felt so calm, so cool and collected and confident as I was talking with him, that that's when it all came together for me. This is what it means to stand up for yourself. So that was that first moment where it really came together for me, and really trying to imagine where he's coming from too, because from his point of view, that's just what he believes so strongly, that it's not right for me to be gay. And it's, I know that it's coming from a place of love for him, and we just have completely different views on it. And so I had to just understand he's coming from a place of love, and so am I. And I just wanted him to know how serious it was for me. And that's why I chose to separate myself from him. Not because I didn't respect him, not because I didn't love him, but because I needed to show that this is me protecting myself, because that's how much it means to me right now. I know for me, when I get into an argument with somebody, or if conflict arises or something like that, most often what I'm looking for is empathy. I just want to know that the other person gets me, understands me. Most times when we teach children how to solve conflicts, it's shake hands, say you're sorry, hug it out. And then they're like, sorry. And they're like, no, you have to mean it.
Right. And that, how far does that get you?
Right. It goes, sorry. Okay. Can I go play now? So usually if we have to tell somebody that you have to mean it, you're not ready.
Yeah.
So, you know, empathy is a process. It takes time. We have to be able to make sure that we're calm. If we're heated and angry, it's harder to empathize because we're so focused on the current emotion, which is anger, frustration, sadness, or whatever it might be, that it's hard to then have space for another person's emotions. So the first step is to make sure that we have taken some deep breaths, that we're in a calm place. When we're calm, then our mind is more clear and able to process other emotions rather than just the one or two emotions that are sort of dominating at the moment. Then usually what I teach the students is empathy is putting yourself into somebody else's shoes, common analogy that we use to describe empathy. And I continue to use the shoe analogy. If I try to put on somebody else's shoes, it's a lot easier if the shoes will fit if that person shares the same shoe size as me. So it's a lot easier to empathize with someone if you've gone through the same thing that they've gone through. And that's what a lot of people think, that you can only empathize with somebody if you've gone through that same experience.
Yeah.
And I do believe that it's easier to do it like that. But think of it like shoes. If I try on somebody else's shoes who, let's say, wore like a size 7, they would be too small for me. I would try to put them on. They won't fit. But even though they don't fit perfectly, I can still get a pretty good idea of what it feels like. So it's just like that with empathy. Even if I haven't gone through the exact same experience as somebody else, I can still try my best to imagine what it might feel like to feel the feelings that person has. I'm not going to get it exactly right, but I'll get a pretty good idea of how they're feeling. So even if I haven't experienced that, I can ask them, how are you feeling? How did this situation make you feel? They say, I feel embarrassed. I can say, I've felt embarrassed before, and I can think back to a time when I felt embarrassed. And it might be a different situation, but we can still relate on that level because I have experienced that emotion. I've experienced that feeling, or it could be anger, frustration, or whatever it might be. And you can still always find a way to connect with somebody, even if you come from completely different backgrounds. Because the students that we work with, they're coming from all different backgrounds, different not only ethnic backgrounds, but socioeconomic class, different cultures, different family structures, different home training, different family culture. There's so many different factors. And so, of course, no one's going to have the same exact experience. But we've all experienced hurt. We've all experienced pain, sadness, embarrassment, excitement. All of these emotions are common amongst us as human beings. So there's always a way where we can connect and empathize with another person.
So what are some of the reactions from the kids?
Some kids are like, yeah, I get it. I know it. Then there are other students who they get it, and I see it even without me having to really teach them. And then other students, I see maybe kind of silliness coming out a little bit when we're trying to practice it. And silliness and laughter can kind of come out when we're feeling uncomfortable. Being vulnerable is very scary for a lot of people, especially for some of our young kids who are told it's not okay to be vulnerable. It can be a very scary or intimidating thing. And so sometimes that protection comes out, and the protection can sometimes come out in silliness or cracking jokes or even acting out in somewhat violent ways, like nudging other kids or starting to push them around or shouting out even. So a lot of emotions can come up when dealing with empathy and also how to be assertive too, because they're very vulnerable situations. So it just depends on the student. I've seen a whole range.
So on behalf of the men listening and mothers of boys,
yes,
how much of what you teach these kids is about just trying to get boys to be more like girls?
What I think is so cool about Mosaic is that the staff that we hire is very intentionally diverse, not just racially diverse, but also all different types of genders, gender expression, personalities, style, all different types of staff that we hire, so that the students can see leaders that look different types of leaders, and so that they may see glimmers of themselves in these leaders. And so even for the very strong, tough men that we also hire on staff, to sometimes see them wearing pink or giving a hug to another man, or to see them showing empathy or showing that they care about another person, I think is huge, just to see that being modeled, to see a young person looking up at somebody who they admire and seeing them exhibit all this love and these Mosaic values and empathy and compassion, I think is huge. So as a teacher, as an educator, also for parents, I think it's really important. What we're teaching is not as important as what we are showing. And what we're showing and what we're exhibiting in ourselves, that is really what the kids are picking up on. So that's one, to show different ways of being a man or being a woman or being any type of gender, right? So that's one thing. And it is not always easy to just tell kids that it's okay. We have a song called It's All Right to Cry.
Yes, I grew up with that song.
And
I love that song.
I love it too. Yeah. It's a great song. And it's kind of like upbeat too.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, we have a whole musical curriculum that helps teach the lessons that we're trying to get across. And so those are great things. But again, it is tough sometimes for that to be okay with a child, particularly right now we're talking about young boys. Even if we do make a breakthrough, let's say at Mosaic, and a young boy feels safe to open up and to cry when, let's say, solving a conflict with another student, and during that conflict resolution, they are able to open up and be very vulnerable and get past that notion that I have to be tough right now. And so that may happen. But then the week at Mosaic is only a week, and then they have to go back home, where in some cases their home culture or their in the culture in their community, it's not okay to open up in the way that they were able to at Mosaic. So thinking about that, while it's great to be able to work with one student at a time and to have those breakthrough moments, really, it's a whole thing. It's a whole societal change really that has to happen around what does it mean to be a boy? What does it mean to be a man? What does it mean to be tough? What does it mean to be strong? Often that means to be aggressive or to fight. If someone says something to you, you say something back. Someone pushes you, you hit them back. That's typically the message that our young boys are receiving.
Right. And escalate.
Not only escalate, but to win the fight, right? To earn respect. That's what it takes to earn respect, often, what we are taught. I like to think that every young child that we reach is just a little seed planted, knowing that it's a whole world, a whole view of what it means to be a man and boy that needs to change. And yes, well, we are making progress, I think. And with each child that we reach, again, like I said, I believe it's a seed planted. And sometimes all I can do is hope that they will remember that it is okay to cry sometimes. And just because maybe they're in a situation currently where it's not okay to do that, that they will remember that mosaic. Sometimes people say, you know, how we are mosaic is different than the real world. But I think mosaic is real too. It's just that sometimes other places haven't quite caught up to it yet. So my hope is that they will just remember what they experienced there, and that maybe if it's not happening now, that someday they will feel okay and safe to open up and to change what it means to be a man and what it means to be tough. And that to be strong can also mean to cry. To be in touch with your emotions is strong. And to care for another person and even be able to stand up for them and stand with them without hurting somebody else is strong.
Well, it's almost like it needs to reach some sort of tipping point where that behavior is then reinforced,
right,
and not mashed down as you grow up. And you know, looking at who the leaders of many of our companies in our country are at this moment, I mean, they are not modeling that behavior.
Yeah.
So we need more of that in more visible places, it seems like. Well, what about with girls? I mean, sometimes I wonder if girls are expected to have so much empathy, right, that they are more concerned about how the other person is feeling than about how they're feeling.
Right.
And how do you reconcile that with also teaching assertiveness?
Mm-hmm.
And, like, how do we make sure our girls don't become too empathetic? And how do we make sure our boys don't lose the thing that is going to make them successful, you know, and that girls could learn from that drive and energy?
Yeah. Again, it's another like social construct that needs to be changed. The whole mindset around what it means to be a girl, what it means to be a woman, that needs to change too. And I think that really what it comes down to is, yes, it is important to have empathy no matter what. And so, like, as a young girl, if you are taught to have empathy, great, keep it. Keep doing that. And not just because that's what we're taught to do, but because that is what we all need as humans. And then what it comes down to is really the assertiveness piece. I know that I've mentioned that a lot, and I think it's because that is what has had the biggest impact on me, because it is what I've ended up using the most now in my adult life, because I didn't learn it as a child, and I'm able to see how impactful it has been on my life now growing up. So I think assertiveness comes from empathy, and being able to stand up for yourself and talk to somebody else and be able to communicate your needs is super important, and to do so in a way that comes from empathy. A lot of times people say, well, I have the right to say whatever I want. Absolutely. We all have the right to say whatever we want. But what do we want to have happen? Do we want to really be heard by the people that we're speaking to? If so, then we have to be able to speak in a way that they can actually hear us. And so that is where empathy and assertiveness really comes in. If we are too aggressive and just putting our own thoughts and our own opinions onto other people, nobody wants that. I don't want to have other people just putting all of their stuff onto me and talking at me and telling me what I should do or something like that. I want to be spoken to in a way that is respectful and of me too, and understanding my feelings and where I'm coming from, so that there is that mutual understanding. And so for our young girls, I think assertiveness can come easier if we teach them at a younger age that it's like empathy at the next level, really. It's empathy at the next level, but it's now it's also focusing on yourself. So empathy is the mutual respect, and assertiveness is mutual respect and self-respect at the same time. So setting your boundaries, too, I think is super important for our young girls to understand, because, again, part of that putting other people's needs before yourself is that we don't often learn how to set up those boundaries and how to say no. And if we say no, then it's considered rude. So then I think that's a lot of times like where passive aggressiveness can stem from.
Well, what is the best advice that you've ever been given about how to be supportive to someone when they do reach out to you?
The best advice that I've ever been given is just to listen. For me, it was always in my nature to, or maybe it's not my nature, but it's how I was taught, because my mom is also this way too, to be a fixer. We want to help everybody. And so if someone comes to me with something, I immediately go into fix it mode. And I know a lot of people can identify with this. Yeah. And like, I immediately just like want to like give them advice and tell them like, here's what you can do. And I just want to fix a situation for them. When a lot of times, sometimes it's enough just to listen without putting my two cents in. If they ask for it, or if I want to share something, I can ask if I can give that. But just being able to hold space is such a skill by itself. And just allowing someone to fill that space with whatever emotions that they're coming to me with, especially when working with kids, I think is so important, to just being able to hold space, because sometimes kids and thereby adults don't have that space to just unload a little bit. And I realize that's also what I need a lot of the time, too.
That was Emily Abad, Director of Programs for the Mosaic Project. She was speaking with Inflection Point host Lauren Schiller, produced at KALW in San Francisco.
It's all right to know. Feelings come and feelings go. It's all right to cry. It might make you feel better. It's all right to cry, little boy. I know some big boys that cry, too.
Women are increasingly using lethal means to commit suicide, Elizabeth Tracy reports.
The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has released disturbing data on the increasing rates of suicide nationally. Karen Swartz, a psychiatrist and depression expert at Johns Hopkins, says women are comprising more of this number.
Related to the suicide change, one of the concerning facts is that women are having higher rates. Women are tending to use more lethal means, or more likely to use firearms or hanging or other lethal means, which is very concerning. There was a long pattern where women attempted suicide more frequently, but were more likely to take pills, and thankfully often didn't know which pills would be fatal, and so they would make an attempt, but thankfully survive. And now when they're making attempts, they are often dying, particularly if they've made these choices.
Swartz says it's fairly easy to search the internet for information relative to how to commit suicide, but notes that the top hits are now occupied by suicide intervention groups offering help. At Johns Hopkins, I'm Elizabeth Tracy.
And that's our show for this week. Thanks to Patrick Garrett for production assistance. Our executive producer is Dr. Alan Shartok. Our theme music is Glow in the Dark by Kevin Bartlett. This show is a national production of Northeast Public Radio. If you'd like to hear this show again, sign up for our podcast or visit the 51% archives on our website at wamc.org. This week's show is number 1512.